Accession number 10602, reel 14.
Battalion guard, a moment ago, you mentioned the number of men as being greater. I think it was seven.
Yes.
Could you explain if they had any particular duties? Why did they have seven men?
Well, there were seven men mounted at quarter guard, and the cleanest man of the privates would be chosen as the CO's stick orderly, who would, for the next 24 hours, be at the CO's discretion, if you like, if that's the proper word. But he also would look after the guard, say that the guard got the meals, got the beds, taken to the guard room, and brought back again to the barracks where, you know, to the rooms where the men belonged. The other guard, the rest of the guard. That's what he would do.
But that, his duty was to keep the CO informed of any...
Well,
any
no, he would just be the runner there, you know, the orderly room sergeant, quartermaster sergeant would give him his details. Or if the adjutant or wanted him to do a message for the CO, then they would call the runner in. But he would be at, when he wasn't attendant to the guard, he would be at the orderly room. But you see, he would sleep in his own bed that night where the other men didn't. They slept in the guard room.
And a runner was needed then because there
was... Oh, yes, always.
There was no phones in the camp, is that right?
Pardon?
Were there any telephones in the camp?
There would be telephones, but a runner gets there, you know... From one room to from the orderly room to the guard room, or you see, there wasn't a telephone in the guard room. Now then, the bugler on duty, he was responsible for all calls. Now, if there was an emergency call, say an alarm, the CO or the adjutant would just say to the runner, "Right, get the bugler to sound the alarm," and he would run the guard. You'd say the guard commander. And tell him what the CO had said or the adjutant had said, and the bugler would be out and he would sound the alarm. Now every man in the barracks would be out, dressed and out in as fast as he possibly could.
Can you recall that happening?
Oh, I used to do practicing. Yes.
Was there ever an occasion that wasn't a practice? There was a real reason for that occurring.
Not a real reason for an emergency while I was there at Barrack Poor, but we did have one night where the 60th Rifles were supposed to defend in Calcutta, and we had an emergency call and we had to make a forced march from Barrack Poor to supposedly attacking Barrack Poor. But when we got to Barrack Poor, there was no one there to stop us from getting in. We just went straight in onto Myanam Camp Down. I think that caused a bit of confusion at district headquarters at the time.
It wasn't a test exercise.
It was supposed to be a test exercise for the defence of Calcutta, and we just walked in. We'd marched, forced march from Barrack Poor, the 17 miles, roughly. We'd done that in I think, the time faster than had been estimated.
So there was no one there to...
There was no one there to stop us, so there was no exercise. We just went straight in. Now cooks made breakfast, and we had our breakfast outside of Fort William.
Do you know if there's any repercussions for that?
I think the CO got a slight telling off by the district commander, but they never published those things. They wouldn't dare. You see, that would have shown the inefficiency of the people defending Calcutta. If we could have got there in the time before the time they had allowed, surely there must have been some inefficiency somewhere.
Can you recall how long it took you to travel to Calcutta on this march?
I couldn't say the length of time, but we did it pretty quick.
Did you have to have your full kit?
Oh, aye. I think the full weight was 56 pounds, and then we had our rifles and ammunition.
And what time of day was this?
This was at night time. I think the alarm went somewhere about 10 o'clock or 9 or 10 o'clock, and we moved in and we were in Calcutta for early, just after... Well, I think it was still dark when we got through Calcutta. The troops, there were supposed to be troops defending Calcutta, we never saw any. So we must have done it in pretty good time.
How did the march affect you, that 17 miles in such a short time?
Didn't seem to bother.
Were there any casualties, can you recall, in there?
I don't think so. I don't think there was anybody fell out. It was a custom mind that if a lad was, you know, couldn't if a lad in any section or any platoon or any company was feeling the strain, his mates would take part of his gear and carry it for him. Or they wouldn't leave him behind, they would help him. Unless he completely collapsed altogether where they couldn't where he couldn't walk. But I never knew that happened.
Do you recall helping people with their kit at some point in marching like that?
Not while I was in India, but yes, when I came back to England, yes.
Okay. Were there any other periods that you were out of Barrackpore for a long period of time, but still based at Barrackpore?
Oh yes, when we went flag marching in northeast Bengal, in the Khulna region.
Now, what is flag marching?
It's to show the people out in the outlying districts in jungle areas where they never saw soldiers, either Indian or British, was to show them that there was troops there to defend them in case it was ever necessary. And we went from village to village. Not the whole battalion, but maybe a company would go one way, another company another way. Maybe half a company would go one way and another half a company would go another way. And I know two villages we went in where we were received was two named Bagarat and Thakarat. But which one we went to first, you know, I just wouldn't know. Such a long time ago.
What sort of reception did you get at these villages?
Very friendly from the villages. Very friendly.
Was there any sort of formal reception, or was it just marching through?
No, there was. We would halt in the main area or in a field, a small field near the village. And the village head person, I don't know whether you call them head man or political or whatever it was, but in some of the places, in the village, in the area where we were going to stay, say for overnight, there would be a pile of oranges and coconuts. They now called them dubs. They were the green coconut with the, you know, they hadn't gone brown. The natives would just go up the palm trees and chop a few off and lie them in the middle, and when we were dismissed we could go and pick the oranges and eat them or the coconuts. I'm not going to show you the coconuts were welcome, even for the heavy boozers or the ones that thought they were heavy boozers. They would get the natives to chop the top off and they would drink the milk out of the coconut. It was really cold.
And you were under canvas, were you?
Ground sheets, bivouac. Two ground sheets, two mates would get together and they would make their own little bivouac. They'd have the two overcoats, one to lie on and one to cover, if they needed. And then they would have the two ground sheets and some string through the loopholes. And you'd get two pieces of branches or tree, knock them into the ground if you could. And then you'd just make a bivouac.
How many? What sort of distance did you have to cover on these flag marches? Was it a major march between each village?
No, it was just to go from one small village, and sometimes you would be expected to play them football. You know, they knew of our reputation, our regiment's reputation of being a football regiment, and a platoon maybe take on the village, or if it was a large village, or you know, a large number of people in the village, we might turn the company team out or half a company, but we were expected to play a game of football. Doesn't matter how far we'd watch that day, we'd still be expected at after 4 o'clock, say around about half past, about 5 o'clock till about half past six, until dark, we'd be expected to play football. We had odd days off when we were allowed to look around any temples. But we had to obey the rules. If it said take your boots off, you know, you had to go in barefoot. You had to leave your boots and your socks outside. I did that in one place.
Were you given a lot of preparatory instructions about how to deal with the native population before you went on these marches?
Well, we were just told more or less a general direction, maybe from your company commander or the CO through an order, in unit orders, that we were going to show the flag and to be on our best behaviour wherever we went.
Can you recall any instance where people weren't on their best behaviour?
No, not on that time, because I think the natives were very friendly. They wanted to know our way of life, I think, you know, they wanted to know how we lived. They were a bit charred, you know, some of them were a bit nervous, but they found that we were, you know, we weren't monsters, if you like. I think on a whole, I think we did a good job. And I think the natives felt we'd done a good job.
Can you recall any instances where you met the natives?
Just when we, in the village, or when we played them football, you know, and rival would be obvious. The villagers want the villagers to win, and we would try and win. Sometimes we didn't, but just to show, you know.
Were you able to talk to them?
Well, it's difficult because even their dialect, you know, we could say a few Barak Indo, or Hindi, if you like. We could speak a few words of Hindustani, but it had to be more or less motions and motions. But generally, yes, friendly.
How long were these flag marches for? How many days would you be away?
I think we were away from Barakpur about a month. But we didn't march every day. You know, we had rest days and, well, days to get your kit cleaned up and everything else, because you just didn't go wandering around, even if it was in jungle area. You still had to be clean. You were inspected before you went on every march.
You mentioned jungle a moment ago. Did you actually go into heavily forested area?
Well, it was all forested area once we got away from Khulna. We crossed a river on old-fashioned river crossing boats. And as soon as we got to the other side, there was a tiny narrow railway which went through somewhere. Where it went to, I'm not sure. But we went along that railway. That was the only track to go through for a distance. And then we broke off into the villages where there was tracks away from the railway. Maybe from the stations, but I cannot really recall, you know, stations as we would call them stations. Because, you know, their way of life was completely different to ours, with a railway station and a railway.
When you were in the jungle, were you given any practice in techniques of surviving in the jungle?
No, it was just straightforward marching, just showing the flag, really. There was no field training, if you like. But when we were back in barracks, we did our battalion training there. But we didn't do any training while we were out on these marches.
Apart from field marches as a duty away from Barakpur, were there any other periods when you were away from Barakpur for a long time?
Not other than that, no. But other men were. I was what they called on the plains the old time I was in Barakpur, where other companies would be at Libong, near Darjeeling. There'd be one or two companies there, and then there would be nearly a company at a place called Ishapur, a few miles away. And they would be on permanent detachment for about a month, and they would come back, and another company or so would relieve them. But that was normal practice. And, you know, when you talk about detachment, you may have a detachment about 200 or 300 miles away. The country's so large, and one unit just couldn't, you know, it couldn't be done.
Did you, or could you, request to go to places like Darjeeling or Ishapur, if you wished?
No. You could apply for local leave, but whether you got it or not was another story. Well, I can't recall anyone ever, officers, yes, but I can't recall the men bothering, because they would only be attached to another unit. You see, you couldn't go like a civilian and be attached. You didn't have the money for to start off. You couldn't go to an hotel because, for the first place, you didn't have the money to pay your way. So you'd have to be attached to another military unit wherever you went. Because every British serviceman had to be known where he was at that any time of the day. In the whole year, it doesn't matter what regiment or what corps.
So you didn't ever have leave from the camp
Never had leave at all in India, never. You got your days off, half day on Thursdays, I think it was, and Sundays when there was no duties. And all of the days in India, if you went on duty, you finished more or less at midday, say 1 o'clock. And then you'd be expected to turn out for sport for to keep you fit after tea, after you'd had your tea, say maybe about 5 o'clock, you'd play sport about half past six or till it was dark. Take part in some sport.
Just to finish off this section, we actually got into this conversation by talking about the daily routine in the barracks, and we'd actually got up to the early evening. You mentioned sport. Was there any other pastimes that you used to do or to occupy yourself while in barracks?
Well, I think I've mentioned that previously, where the lads used to make table centres and little things.
What did they make those from?
Silk cotton. There was one thing used to happen about once a month. The battalion band and bugles used to turn out and sound retreat. I think the normal saying is beat retreat. But they used to turn out at least, I think it was once a month, and they would parade up the main road in the barracks, and and it was always a nice feature. I don't know which officer or which commanding officer ever ordered that to be done, but it was welcomed by the lads.
What would you go and do then?
You just watch them maybe from the barracks, you know, but it was accepted practice. The bandsmen and the buglers knew the whole battalion, or the men that was there of the battalion, would note whether anything was wrong or not, you know. And they would let them know in the canteen. You know, they wouldn't shout at them. They wouldn't dare. They'd get punished. But if there's something did go slightly wrong or something went wrong, the lads would pull the bandsman or the bugler's legs. Oh, aye, there was always that friendly...
Can you recall incidents where things...
No, I can only recall one incident. But it wasn't on that. It was on a church parade. And the lad finished up as a captain in the Royal Army Medical Corps who did it. But he'd come into the army as a band boy, and he was the big drummer. Well, one, this is funny, this one. Victor Gunn's his name, so and he came from Watford. And he always used to say, I'm Victor Gunn and I come from Watford. The way the people down there speak, and he used to say it quite broadly. And he was proud of it. And everybody, you know, he was a well-liked lad. And he was the big drummer anyhow. On this Sunday morning, they were there for church parade. And as he was putting his chin strap on, it had broke, you see. And he hadn't time to cut it and then put another wall in so that it would go to his...
The
topi, you see. So what he did, he whipped his shoelaces and he doubled the shoelace around and put it round up, and he would get through the inspection without being seen. What a lad. And he tied it up, you know, when the bugle major or the bandmaster went around and inspected and saw him, he was placed on a charge straight away for being improperly dressed on a CO's parade, which church parade was CO's parade. And of course, you know, we are a quick marching regiment. He just about doubled them to church. He beat the drum that fast they were almost running into church. When the church prayer was finished, I'm not sure whether he got put in the guard room or not for, you know, but he got punished for it. Why? He got punished for being improperly dressed and then for not keeping pace properly with the drum. He left the band after that, though, and he came to our platoon. That's why I know the lads well. And later on, he went on one of those medical orderlies courses, and I was at the hospital when he was at the hospital as an orderly. He was a trained orderly before I got there.
To return to the moment for the evening, was there any relaxation of dress
oh, yes.
The evening?
Oh yes. I was looking for some photos to show you the relaxation. You relaxed from dress when you weren't on duties. If there was no parades or duties, you relaxed all the time. You could walk about with boots and stocking, your sock turned down. That'd be neat, You just couldn't walk around like a gypsy or anything like that. But you could have PT shorts and a PT vest on, and you could just walk about like that, or you could have khaki shorts and a vest, or khaki shorts and a white shirt, or khaki shorts and a khaki shirt, drill shirt. The dress was completely relaxed. You could have whites, or if you wanted to go into town, you want whites. I think you had to have a pass for that. But you could have whites. You could have a white jacket. Same cut as the Blue Patrols back in England. Only you could have whites and white shoes. But that had to be clean. The horse had to be clean. Why? The dress was really, other than parades, you know, it was more or less, not go as you please, but pretty relaxed. Different completely to England, Britain anyway.
You mentioned going into the town. Did you do that yourself?
Into
the town?
There was no town of Barrackpore, just a bazaar.
Did you go to the bazaar?
Well, yes. Once, when you wanted little things which you couldn't get in the camp, yes. You see, you only had the contractor in the camp. And maybe you wanted sheets or towels, handkerchiefs and things like that. And you would go to the bazaar.
Was there any sort of form of entertainment you could enjoy by going to the bazaar? Was it just a matter of purchasing things for...
Well, you could call it entertaining. I mean, it would be entertaining to people of this country if they had to go. Because you couldn't just go and say, how much is that article? And they'll give you a straight answer. That was never on. You never won, mind, but...
Well, did you do then?
Well, you bargained. You see, you would say, how much do you want... just say for a pair of PT shorts or a vest. And just say, how much are the PT shorts? You would maybe say 10 rupees. No, nicely, they weren't worth two at the time. But he was just there. And then you'd say, oh, Aranye Saab, I'm going. You know, you'd just walk away. Oh, come back, Saab, come back. And then you would start again. And he still won. But, you know, this was it. Now, those times you didn't have the time to do that. You know, in Britain, you go into a shop and you say, a bar of chocolate, say, is a shilling. Or, what is it, 20 pence or something today. But in those days, it was annas and rupees, and you would just go in and say, I'll give you 1 rupee 8 annas for the article. And then you'd say, well, I haven't got time, because you had to be out by retreat. You remember, you know, your tea was at 4 o'clock and retreat was 6 o'clock, so you only had 2 hours to get your meal. And if you weren't supporting your company, anything like that, the time was limited because you had to be out. You weren't allowed in the bazaars after 6 o'clock, after retreat. So, you know, this bargaining, if you like, with them, used to take the time away. But sometimes it was good, you know, when you had time, you could go in and you'd have a good bargain. You never won, but you always, you know, got to know the natives. Oh, aye. And they would welcome you. If you'd been before, they would welcome you back. They would know you. They would still try and beat your mind, see how much money they could get out of you.
Did it ever cause friction at all, this system?
I don't think so. I can't remember it causing friction. They had their way of life, and that was it. Bargainer, you know, it was something strange to us, but you got used to it.
Yes, did you know of any soldiers who couldn't get on with the Indian customs, the Indian way of life?
Well, they didn't mix with the Indian way of life. None of us mixed with it. You see, we were not allowed to. You were not allowed to go into a village. If you went into a village, you went in at your own risk, and you went in at the risk of being punished without permission from your company commander or the battalion commander. If they said that place, out of bounds. I'm not saying mine some soldiers didn't go out of bounds. Where there's a will, there's a way. Always was and always will be. And you always get some lads, you know, who will go whether they should or not. I'm not saying that, you know, we're no whiter than white than anybody else. I think that would happen with any formation.
Yes, you mentioned that you had some afternoons free. I think one was a Thursday afternoon, wasn't it? Was that then an opportunity to go out of the camp?
Well, you could, but there was nothing out of the camp. You know, you could have done if you'd been adventurous enough. But you were limited. Because if you were going to go somewhere, you had to say where you were going. You had to leave word where you were going in case you didn't return. And of course, if you didn't return, and they would have to send a search party.
Did you yourself ever go out to the camp on those afternoons?
I'd been within the camp perimeter, near the River Hoogly. I walked around there, but it was all much of a muchness. Once you'd seen it, it was that. It was that scene. One strange thing I did see was an Indo holy man. I never saw him move. The length of time he sat there, and I've never seen a dirtier, scruffier individual in all my life than that one. But yet he was a holy man, and you wouldn't dare say anything. And the Hindus would take him, you know, little bowls of food and that, and put them at where he was at. But you'd have got severely punished if you'd interfered. Why? You had to respect their religions and their way of life.
Can you recall any instance where people didn't or were punished?
I can't recall any time I was there, but I think I mentioned to you before about the one at Bombay, where one man went into the Punjabis, I think it was, the Punjabis married quarters.
Yes, yes.
And he was never found, man, but if he'd been found, he would have got severely punished. He would have been punished.
Okay. How long did you stay at Barrackpore for?
Just around about a year. I think it was about a year.
Can you recall where you went to next?
Yeah, Bombay and Doolally.
Can you tell me a little bit about the camp at Bombay? Was it very different from Barrackpore?
Yes. The barracks were very old barracks. I think they were not as airy and not as clean. If you can understand, if I can only give that its proper name. There was an awful lot of bed bugs at Barrackpore, and you did your bed burning with paint strippers, what do you call those things, blow lamps, once a week. Every man in there had to burn the metal parts of the beds because of the bugs that was there. That was the worst place I've been for bed bugs. It was a good camp. If you understand what I mean, with it being in a town, at the end of a town, and more or less a Europeanized town, but the bed bugs was awful. There were so many of them. It doesn't matter how many you killed over there, back there again.
Were they tubular steel beds? Were the bed bugs inside the actual steel tube?
No, they were like a flat steel. You know, crisscrossed, what's they call it? Like a trellis, mm-hmm. Only thin strips of steel. And you used to get in underneath, and we used to burn them. Everybody had to do it. It was more or less like one parade a week, that, you know, but it was nearly all day.
Were your blankets and mattresses fumigated in any way? Was there any way of getting them out of those parts?
We used to get the bedding washed and cleaned, but there was no way you could stop the bed bug. The buildings were so old. I think there must have been about the first barracks built in India. There must have been. They were old, you know.
You're talking here about Bombay, not Barrackpore.
Bombay, not Barrackpore, no.
Apart from the discomfort of bed bugs, what else was different about this barracks?
Oh, they were closer. The barrack blocks were closer. And you were near, well, you were on the outskirts of Bombay itself. You were on Calaba Causeway.